Good morning. It is time to get up with the bad boys and the bad man. Michael fires on the Pistons after all these years. Isaiah Thomas will respond live on our show. Meanwhile, the draft is complete, and the Saints may have been the biggest winners of all. Did you see what they did yesterday? We're all over it. And Bill Belichick uses a fascinating phrase to describe his team's decisions at quarterback. We're loaded up and ready to roll. On a Monday, we get up with you starting right now. From Bristol, I am Mike Greenberg. Delighted you have chosen to get up with us here. We hope you had a wonderful weekend. And for all of you who watched Last Dance last night, all I can say is I told you. And we're getting into all the bad boy stuff in just a moment. But first, let's get up and go with some notes from around the NFL. The Saints and free agent quarterback Jameis Winston are reportedly close to finalizing a one-year contract. Winston would essentially be replacing Teddy Bridgewater in New Orleans. We have a lot of reaction to this fascinating move. And it wasn't the only one the Saints made yesterday. Because while they were doing that, they also signed quarterback Taysom Hill to a two-year, $21 million contract that includes $16 million fully guaranteed. Adam Schefter with much more on all of this live in 15 minutes. NBA. Starting on Friday, the league will begin reopening team practice facilities for individual player workouts in states that are loosening stay-at-home restrictions. Teams will remain prohibited from holding group workouts or organizations' team activities. We'll talk about that with Wendy a little later. But now let's get to the main event. Episodes 3 and 4 of Last Dance last night on ESPN. And this was one of the moments from Michael Jordan's career chronicled last night that everyone is talking about.
Well, I think the crowd is cheering here for the Bulls right now. And the Pistons as they leave the court.
I don't think they're cheering for the Bulls, but I think the greeting is for the Pistons as they are headed off as time runs down. Pistons wasting no time in getting out of here. They left the bench, although there's 7 and 9/10 seconds remaining. The Pistons just left.
It was one of the legendary moments of basketball of its era. And Michael Jordan's response last night was the part of it none of us had seen before. Almost 30 years later, he said, whatever Isaiah says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know there's time enough to think about it or the reaction of the public that's changed his perspective. You can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he wasn't a bleep. I'm cleaning that up as best I can. And for those of you who watched, you know what he said. You know what Horace Grant said about them. And so Jay Williams is here. And so, look, as I've told you many times, I covered all those teams. I'm certainly well aware, and all of us, Jay Will, were aware of the Pistons famously walking off that floor before that game was over. But to hear Michael Jordan and Horace Grant, 30 years later practically, still holding those grudges, what did you think of it last night?
I love it. This is basketball. And Isaiah also didn't recede. He didn't say, hey, we made a mistake. He said, this is what it was. This was the era of fierce basketball. But Greeny, I also think that viewers need to understand some context when it comes down to this walk off. The Bulls are up 3-0. And the day before that game that they were able to close, that clinch that series, Michael Jordan was in the end zone getting questions asked to him by media reporters, and he called the Pistons bad champions. He said that they were bad for basketball. He said that they were shameful. So once again, I'm not excusing those actions, but when they're the bad boys and they're considered that, and you know they understand that the Lakers, the Celtics, Magic, Larry, and then Jordan, the torch is going to be passed to Jordan. Like, it always felt like Detroit wasn't the team that was supposed to be pushed up in the eyes of the NBA. And this is what happens when teams fight and try to find a way to win championships. I'm not condoning it. I'm not saying it was okay, but that's where they were at that moment of time. And I respect it. That's what real basketball is.
I'm not condoning it, and I'm not saying it's okay, but I love it. Because that's what sports at their core are supposed to be. They didn't walk out onto the middle of the floor, the Pistons exactly. didn't, and punch anyone in the face. They just walked off because they were so angry and so frustrated, and there was genuine animosity between the teams. Again, I'm not suggesting this is the way young sports people should condone, should behave themselves, should comport themselves. But I have to be honest with you, in an era now where there is as much camaraderie and friendliness between the players as we see, there's something about this, Jay Williams, that I miss and I still love.
Greeny, and I'm with you. And don't forget, to all the parents out there that teach their kids about basketball, Charles Barkley said this back in the day, like, we're not role models for your kids. Not every player is a role model for your kid, okay? That's your job as a parent. So, like, this whole thing about, oh, they did the wrong thing, like, that's what basketball was back then. But I also give the Bulls a lot of credit, because when they got knocked on their back, when they got punched in the mouth, like, you didn't see Scottie Pippen or Horace Grant, you know, grimace or be in pain or react to all that. They finally mentally felt like they were at a different level, that they could surpass that. And that was a huge growth opportunity for that team. And that's when they started to become the best ever to do it.
Again, Isaiah will be live for his first interview since this aired last night with us coming up here in an hour and a half. He'll be live at 9:30 Eastern time. I guess I would ask you this, because they used, the Pistons used the fact that the Celtics had done the same to them some years before when they finally dethroned them. But Michael made the point, hey, they beat us each of the last 2 years. I stood there and shook everybody's hand. Were the Pistons, all these years later, were the Pistons wrong for walking off the floor without congratulating the winners?
I think all the guys would probably think, hey, maybe us being where we are now, we might do that differently. But then at the same time, Greeny, like, it's, these were the bad boys. These were the bad boys. And I want to try to go back in time and do some research. Like, I know that they were vilified a little bit in this documentary, but they also did a lot of great things for the city of Detroit. They also did things for our country, and Isaiah stepped up and did a lot of different things too. So I don't want to lose sight of that, but this is how they played basketball. This is how they felt like they got recognition, that they had to do things different. So of course everybody wishes they can go back in time and revisit things, but I don't know. That's something I look forward to hearing Isaiah talk about later on the show. I'll tell you that.
Well, I can tell you someone who was not apologetic, and that is Bill Laimbeer, who was at the center of so much of this and candidly instigated the walk-off that night. Bill was interviewed by Rachel Nichols for The Jump. That interview will air in its entirety this afternoon here on ESPN, but we have a clip of it, and as you will see, Bill is not sorry at all.
He whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game, but more importantly, they said we're bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me, because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us. But, okay, move on.
Do you regret now not shaking their hand? Do you stand by that?
No. Why would I regret now today? I don't care what the media says about them. I never did. If I did, I'd be a basket case, especially back then. I was about winning basketball games and winning championships, and did whatever I had to do to get the most out of my ability and our team. And we did. At the end of the day, we're called world champions.
So Bill Laimbeer, unapologetic. We will have Isaiah Thomas's reaction a little later. We have Dan Orlovsky and the big swagoo Marcus Spears with us this morning as well. Marcus, I'll give you a quick thought here. What'd you make of all of that?
I love it. I love beef in sports. Like, it matters to me. This is the age that we talked about in basketball that we've gotten away from, and why so many people not current players in the NBA. This is what made the NBA. This is what, to be honest with you, the Detroit Pistons is made a lot of basketball fans that were coming over from different types of sports to see the physicality in basketball. And I remember watching this, and I remember all of this transpiring, and I'm thinking to myself, like, dude, basketball players are tough. Like, this is how the game is supposed to be played. Now, obviously, we evolve, and I think that's what people miss now. The evolution of the game is that you evolve and you realize some of those things weren't nice. But I don't have one damn problem with the Pistons walking off the court, G. Never will and never have.
Dan?
Yeah, I agree with Marcus. I mean, sports are emotional. Kind of watching last night, I wish I was 20 years older, just so I could have experienced that, like, in my mid-30s as I am now, to really appreciate the hatred and the competitiveness. I loved it. I love what it kind of brings to sports. I kind of want to start a fight with somebody, and it'll be Jay Will, because I think Jay Will was the one clapping coming out of that clip with Laimbeer. And I'd ask this, like, would he be okay if LeBron did that today?
Well,
like, would he be okay if LeBron
right question.
Walked off
Dan,
in a loss?
You took me to exactly the right place. Because Jay Williams, LeBron James did that. He walked off the floor at the end of a playoff series and didn't shake hands. And he then talked about how big he's such a tough competitor. And Mike and I, on Mike and Mike and the rest of the world, the following morning, were all over LeBron. He heard enormous criticism for doing exactly that in a different generation, Jay.
Greeny, do you want me to take you to my perspective as a player? I wouldn't care what the media said. I don't care what the media would said. Like, I that doesn't bother me at all. And I think we're living in an age, especially when it comes to sports, we're so sensitive to everything. I know it's our job to be on TV and talk about this stuff. But also, you can make a case back for the Bad Boys. Like, I don't know if Jordan and those guys become that team if they don't have to go through Detroit and the Bad Boys. Like, that series made Michael Jordan get in the weight room and get stronger and get tougher and find some kind of mental fortitude to get over that hump. So you can actually make a case that if it weren't for the Detroit Pistons, the Jordan and the Bulls, they never get to that kind of level of success. And I would say the same with anybody that wants to compete. I'm not saying everything is right and we have to sit there and be like, hey, this is right, this is wrong. But this is also sports sometimes, and not everybody comes from the same background. I would be okay with it.
Hey, listen, 30 years later, we're still talking about it. You don't do that if they shake hands and walk off with their arms around each other. Okay, we have much more on this. Yeah, real quick, go ahead, Marcus.
The games have changed. Even when I started in the NFL, not only being good, but your physicality is what made you a really good team as well. You look at it in the NBA during that time. Now physicality is different. It's based in skill now for everybody being champion. But back then, physicality and how good you were was what made you a champion.
Yes, every single player on those teams in today's rules would have been suspended for the year starting in the first game of the season. Again, Isaiah Thomas, 9:30 Eastern, with his reaction live here on Get Up. Meanwhile, coming up next, whoever says Sunday is a day of rest should talk to the Saints. They were awfully busy yesterday. You'll hear how a good team might have gotten a whole lot better after the draft. And then, when Isaiah Thomas and the Bad Boy Pistons lost, they didn't stick around. You'll hear why Michael Jordan is still so angry. 3 decades later, we're talking about it all morning with you. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Giveback, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up, and the draft may have ended Saturday, but the Saints may have had their biggest day on Sunday. They lock up their quarterback Taysom Hill with a 2-year, $21 million deal, which includes $16 million fully guaranteed, and they are in conversations with free agent quarterback Jameis Winston. The two sides are reportedly close to finalizing a 1-year contract. I learned all of that by following Adam Schefter on Twitter yesterday. And here is Shefty on a Monday morning. So, Shefty, with Breeze and Taysom Hill on the roster, tell me how the Jameis Winston piece of this works out.
Well, this is very simple, Greeny. He fits right into the Teddy Bridgewater role that he played last season before he left and signed with the Carolina Panthers in the NFC South. Remember last year, Breeze was the starter, Bridgewater was the backup, Taysom Hill was the joker, so to speak, where they could use him all across the field. And now they get to continue doing the very same thing, assuming they get the deal done with Jameis, which is likely in the next 24 or 48 hours. And then if that deal does get done, Breeze is the starter, Jameis Winston is a backup kind of guy, and Taysom Hill is the guy they can use all over the field in a variety of positions. That would be the setup going forward. And it makes sense for Jameis Winston because Jameis Winston sees a situation where he can learn from Sean Payton, learn from Drew Brees, who he's always admired, maybe work on some of the flaws in his game, eliminate some of the interceptions that they've always tried to do in Tampa Bay. and then rise up on a one-year deal and hit the market again next year.
Quickly, before I get Dan and Marcus in here, you were one of the first people to tell me last season on this show just how much Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill and does legitimately view him as a quarterback and maybe his quarterback of the future. So how would you right now describe what the Saints' quarterbacking future looks like?
Very interesting, because Drew Brees has the deal set up to go into broadcasting. So I assume that this is going to be Drew Brees' last year, which means quarterback for next year. I think right now Taysom Hill's under contract. He would be the only Saints guy under contract for next year. But what's to say that Jameis Winston couldn't go into New Orleans, play well like Teddy Bridgewater did last year, and they'd want to keep Jameis in that role again? Taysom Hill has set himself up with the money he's being paid to be a starting quarterback in New Orleans next year. But they have this whole year to let it play out to see how each side acclimates.
All right, Shefty, much more from you as we go. Stay with me here, but I want to bring Dan and Marcus in. Dan, what we've been talking a lot about where Jameis would wind up. What do you think of this as the landing spot?
It's one of the most mature decisions we've seen Jameis Winston make, because it's the right place. You know, there's a difference between doing what you want and doing what is right. And this is the right spot for him, because I'm sure Jameis wanted a starting quarterback job, or at least a chance to go compete for one. But the right place is, all right, is there a place where I can go and learn from a great coach and a really good quarterback ahead of me and just start to rewrite my career? And it's brilliant for New Orleans, because you get a player that, one, is in your division from Tampa Bay. He might share some information. And two, to Shefty's point, you get to see a super talented player up close and personal. And I'd say this, that Drew Brees and Jameis Winston on the surface are a lot more similar as players than people think. Like, Drew Brees is a really aggressive quarterback. He just doesn't make mistakes with the football. Jameis is a really aggressive quarterback that makes mistakes with the football. So can he learn that aspect from Drew Brees? And then the reality is this, Greeny, like, Drew Brees wasn't Drew until he got with Sean Payton. And Sean Payton is the coach that was the offensive coordinator with Kerry Collins that took the Giants to the Super Bowl and was the quarterback coach with Quincy Carter when he took the Cowboys to the Super Bowl. So this is an outstanding situation for Jameis to learn from. Him making this choice makes me think that Jameis, or I have confidence that Jameis will absolutely be a starter in the NFL again.
And could it be in New Orleans? We just heard Shefty tell us how much the Saints like Taysom Hill, but it's worth pointing out, Taysom Hill is markedly older than Jameis Winston is, and Jameis Winston, Marcus, was the first pick in the NFL draft 5 years ago. Do you see a way that they transition from Brees to Winston in New Orleans?
It's absolutely possible, G. And you know, I've been talking about Jameis Winston needing to sit on the sideline and watch and process the game from a mental standpoint and see one of the greats do it. We had him paired with a couple teams with this sort of dynamic, a coach that has a lot of stability and a quarterback that's been doing it well for a long time. That's why I was talking about Pittsburgh. But this is even a better situation. Sean Payton was in Dallas when I was in Dallas. Great offensive mind. Worked with Romo when he ushered in the change from Drew Bledsoe. So he has this experience with getting guys up to speed and up to par and finding things that they do well. I don't think anybody doesn't believe Jameis will be a starter again. It's just too much talent to think that if you can get some of the things that are correctable done with Jameis Winston, that he can be a starter. He still threw for 5,000 yards last year. And we talk so much about the interceptions that we forget how good Jameis Winston is when he's rolling. He's top five material. So the fact that he gets the ability to be coached by Sean Payton, he can watch Drew Brees go about his business. What I thought was the most important facet of Jameis Winston signing with another team is amazing. And look, for this notion that Taysom Hill is getting paid, Taysom Hill is basically making $10 million a year. That is great, but that is for a great football player, not a quarterback, in my opinion.
So again, for both of you guys, I have 15 seconds. Marcus, very quickly, if Brees goes down for 4 weeks or 5 weeks in the middle of the season as he did a year ago, who's their starter?
Jameis Winston.
Dan?
Jameis Winston, G.
Yeah, I totally agree. It'll be Jameis Winston. It should be. It's a great situation for the Saints.
Yeah, listen, Jameis Winston, if he gets everything cleaned up, doesn't become a starting quarterback, he becomes a star. This could be a great signing for both sides. As we continue, you think Michael Jordan has loosened up? Think again. You'll hear why a slight from nearly 30 years ago still gets under his skin. We'll get to that after we get to a little sneaky Hembo time. This one's going to be for Wendy, who'll join us next. Which is the last team to win a playoff series against the team that eliminated them the previous 3 years? That's the question. The answer is coming up next as we get up with you on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up, and The Last Dance is brought to you by Facebook. We hope you enjoyed episodes 3 and 4 last night. Certainly Isaiah Thomas was in the middle of a lot of it, and Isaiah will join us live an hour from now, 9:30 Eastern time here on ESPN. But right now, Brian Windhorst is with us, our NBA insider, and Hembo has a sneaky question for him. We, of course, saw the Bulls beat the Pistons after being eliminated by them 3 consecutive years. Wendy, which is the last team to win a playoff series against the team that had eliminated them the previous 3 years?
I can't think of one since the Bulls. So that's the only guess I have. If he has a better one than that, he's got me.
There is one that came almost immediately after. It was the Knicks, who then beat the Bulls in 94 after Jordan. While Jordan was busy playing baseball, the
Good
Knicks
one.
Got through that and in what was an extraordinary series, the Hugh Hollins series. And so it does have to go back almost that far. The great Brian Windhorst is with us here, Wendy. And I want
you you like giving that answer.
Remind us of all of something here. So we're talking about Last Dance last night. And again, the spotlight on Isaiah and the Pistons walking off the floor without shaking hands. And we were trying to put it into a more recent example. And I was remembering that LeBron James had something similar to this happen, because I remember Mike and I talking about it for a week on our show when it happened. What were those circumstances? What do you remember, and how similar was it?
Yeah, it was 2009 conference finals. The Cavs had been number one overall seed, upset by the Magic. LeBron had one of the greatest series ever by a player who lost the series. The buzzer sounded. He was standing right by the tunnel for the visitor's entrance, and he just bolted. Got really scrutinized for that. Although I have to say that in following years, there's a whole bunch of teams who didn't shake hands with him and the Cavs. I mean, I can still remember KG not doing that at least once, if not more. But he definitely got roasted for that.
Okay, so there was at least that similarity there. Meanwhile, as you watched episodes 3 and 4 last night, I'll give you the floor. What was the one thing that jumped out to you the most?
I never knew about the Rodman vacation to Vegas. I mean, I got to be honest with you, amongst players in the league, this has got to be the leading discussion today. Does this mean I can go ask for a vacation in the middle of the playoffs and they can give it to me? Or not the playoffs, but the season? Absolutely stunning. And not only that, Phil Jackson called Michael Lynn to ask for his permission. Like going to dad and asking, hey, can we let him go? I mean, unbelievable stuff. And of course, Michael was right. He had to go get him. And I want to know more about the mission to go get him. That's going to be on the cutting room floor.
Everything about it was incredible last night. Yes, the Rodman piece of that. And I think in some ways, the genius of Phil Jackson to navigate those circumstances. You know, no coach normally would ever let any player do something like that. But I guess he recognized that they had to, and it worked. All right, quickly, Wendy, while I have you, I'm sure a lot of people saw the reporting on this over the weekend. Starting this Friday, the NBA is going to start reopening team practice facilities for individual player workouts, but only in the states that are loosening stay-at-home restrictions. So I read everything I could find on this weekend, and I'm still a little bit confused. What is the most important thing that fans should know about this?
That this isn't just about practice facilities, that this is going to be an issue going forward, because where we're going as a country is where there's different rules in different states, where we possibly could have the rule of 10 of getting people together lifted in one place and not the other, where you may be able to get together with 50 or 100 here but not get together with more than a few people there, and that could affect where games are going to possibly be played with or without fans. And this is a mess for the NBA. I don't know how they're going to clean it up. There's no precedent here, but look, I'm in a place right now, Omaha, Nebraska, where there was never a stay-at-home order. And Doug McDermott, who lives here, plays for the Pacers, he's been able to practice this whole time. So it's not been on a level playing field for anybody. And this is going to continue to be a political issue more than a sports issue, not just today, but maybe 2 months, 3 months, even 6 months from now.
All right, Wendy, outstanding. Thank you, my man. We will check in with you as this continues to develop. Lots of news as the NBA tries to work its way back. Meanwhile, the NFL just finished its weekend, the draft, and the Packers were very much under the spotlight. They traded up, as you know, and selected Utah State quarterback Jordan Love, 26 overall, first time in the common draft era that Green Bay traded up in the first round to take a quarterback. So we all figured, okay, they'll go out and they'll get themselves some weapons for Aaron Rodgers after that. Well, with their second pick, they took a running back, A.J. Dillon, out of Boston College. He's the highest drafted running back in Green Bay since Eddie Lacy in 2013. And despite a record-tying 36 wide receivers getting drafted this weekend, maybe the deepest wide receiver class ever, the Packers were one of nine teams not to take one. Dan Orlovsky and Marcus Spears are back. Dan, what did you think of the Packers draft?
Disaster. I didn't hate the Jordan Love pick in the first round. I came on television Friday morning and said, listen, this is a good time to take the quarterback, especially if you like him. But I had to wait until the 62nd pick, their second round pick, to see what they actually did. And the fact that they don't take a receiver is ridiculous. I mean, it is inexcusable. That it makes the Jordan Love pick look even worse. They essentially closed their own window. The Packers' window is now closed, and they did it to themselves. Think about that. With the Hall of Fame quarterback, they closed their own window. And my question is this. If the Jordan Love pick was about the future, why did you not use one of those future picks, whether it's a second round pick or something, to make sure that you got back to the beginning of the second round to take a wide receiver? It's inexcusable by Green Bay to do this. And now the biggest question tied to their organization, not their team, their organization in general, from this point forward, no matter what their record is, when is Aaron Rodgers leaving town? Their Hall of Fame quarterback, that will be the only question that gets asked often, is when is Aaron Rodgers leaving town?
I agree, but complicating that matter, Marcus Spears, is the contract, because it is completely prohibitive for the Packers to sever ties in any way with Rodgers in either of the next 2 years. The cap hits, we ran through them on Friday. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but they would be colossal. So now you've got a likely unhappy quarterback in this circumstance, and there's really no way to make a change here. Marcus, how does this go from here?
I don't know what the hell Dan is talking about. They drafted three O-linemen, a running back, and a tight end. Is this just, like, that's a lot of help offensively. When you think about this, look, G, I don't have a, that's being facetious with Dan, but I don't have a visceral reaction. Think of, they were in the NFC Championship last year. This is a good football team. For all of the, you would think that the Green Bay Packers went 4-12 the way people are talking about this draft and talking about how bad the roster was. They were in the NFC Championship. And oh, by the way, must I mention that it was not the offense that more than likely cost them the game? Possibly giving up 300 yards rushing cost him the game. Jimmy Garoppolo didn't even have to come out of the locker room after halftime for San Francisco to win the football game. So there's a lot of this conversation going on. And obviously, this was a heavy receiver draft, and everybody is enamored with talking about getting Aaron Rodgers the weapons. They were 13-3 and went to the NFC Championship. The Packers brass obviously is going to be scrutinized for not drafting the wide receiver. By the way, they have a pretty good one. Could they have added? Absolutely. But everybody can add a receiver. I just don't have this crazy reaction. And then, too, for all of this stuff we talk about with Aaron Rodgers did, and he's falling off and dropping off. Bottom line is, Aaron Rodgers is being compared to how great he was when we were talking about Aaron Rodgers being the best ever. But the bottom line is, Aaron Rodgers still was able to carry Green Bay to an NFC Championship and 13 wins. So let's pump the brakes a little bit on talking like this is a Green Bay team that didn't win games last year and make it damn near to the Super Bowl.
Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, Marcus, what did we say about the Patriots last year? What did we say about the Patriots offense? That they what?
They lacked weapons.
Oh, So we talked all season long that the Patriots lacked weapons for Tom Brady, and that was going to be the downfall of their football team. And I'm steadfast on thinking that's one of the reasons that Tom Brady left. And so you don't think it's a big deal that the Packers didn't draft weapons for Aaron Rodgers? You don't think it's more likely that we're going to have the same conversations that we had about Brady and his lack of weapons with Aaron and his lack of weapons? Marcus, their second and their third receiver from last year is not even on the same team. They have Davante Adams. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL. But the fact that you know you have at least a two-year window left with Aaron Rodgers, and you don't get a receiver. Don't talk to me about a running back, Marcus. Don't talk to me about a couple offensive linemen. They have a good offensive line to begin with. You had a chance to go get an integral part wide receiver-wise, and you didn't. That's inexcusable.
The running back was actually the most productive guy on their team last year. So how they used him had a lot to do with the success of the offense. Dan, I don't feel like fighting this morning. It's Monday. I don't want to fight with you. Okay? We fight enough. But the bottom line is this. All of you sensitive people, all about the quarterback needing help. They went to the NFC Championship last year, and they were almost in, could have possibly been in that game and won it if the defense wouldn't have given up 300 yards.
That's true.
That's,
Marcus.
That's what the reality of the Green Bay Packers were last year.
Let me ask you both, just because I don't have time for it. Just raise your hand if you believe we will ever see Aaron Rodgers and the Packers in the Super Bowl again. Fair enough. That's what I expected. Much more football as we continue. Meanwhile, it's time now for our motorsports update, which is brought to you by Mother's Polish. And we take you to the AutoNation IndyCar Challenge from the virtual circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. Four laps to go. Felix Rosenquist losing control of his car, spinning out all by himself. Formula One driver Lando Norris, who had been dominating most of the race, had to swerve to avoid him and is able to reclaim the race lead and would hold on to win. Our motorsports update brought to you by Mother's Polish. Coming up today, after we wrap up Get Up, it's time for First Take. That's followed by SportsCenter, then NFL Live. At 3, Rachel Nichols and The Jump. Then our NFL Draft Team Grade Special. SportsCenter back at 5:30 with the PTI guys joining the show later. And we cap it all off with SportsCenter with SVP. A busy day here on ESPN. Coming up, we thought the Patriots needed a quarterback to replace Tom Brady. Didn't work out that way. What happened? You'll find out next. Get Up on ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere. Which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
Now, should we explain to our audience what the Packers' plans for Aaron Rodgers are going forward?
Well, we got dogs in the background barking here, Greeny. I apologize about that. Hold on. Hey, can you please shut my door? This is unbelievable. This is the way of the world right now. What are we going to do?
Who won the weekend? Shefty's dogs may have stolen our show on Friday morning, but Bill Belichick's dog Nike won the weekend as the breakout star of the NFL draft. First, Nike appeared to sit in and make a pick for Belichick, and then later, Belichick returned and rewarded Nike with a treat. So that's who won the weekend. Nike Belichick, if indeed they use last names. When it comes to that kind of stuff. And Shefty, as I bring you in, before we get to a little other news, I know there was a point that you wanted to make about who really was the biggest winner this weekend.
Listen, to me, Roger Goodell has been the commissioner for 13 years. This was his finest moment as the NFL commissioner in 13 years. I know he's done two CBAs, but there was nothing better than this in his mind. And even he told the staff that he thought it might be the proudest moment in the NFL's 100-year history. So Roger Goodell, I think, who's gotten an awful lot of criticism over time, deserves some credit for the three-day draft here.
I agree. It was extraordinary. Extraordinary work done by everyone at the NFL, by everyone involved in it here, Shefty, including you and NFL Network and everybody else. My congratulations to you all. Meanwhile, let's get to the moves and what they meant as we run the hurry up. Eagles taking Jalen Hurts surprised a lot of people. What were they thinking?
Listen, not a big deal here. They viewed him as a weapon. He was going to be a second-round draft pick. They got burnt by not having a backup in the playoffs last year. They're looking for more versatility to go with more speed. Jalen Hurts brings that to him. Quarterbacks are currency in this league. They felt that Jalen Hurts was the best currency that they could have. They picked him, Greeny.
Next move here was Trent Williams finally traded. Tell us about it.
Listen, Kyle Shanahan drafted Trent Williams in Washington. He knows him as well as anybody. And his dad, Mike Shanahan, once inherited Gary Zimmerman, a Pro Bowl left tackle. He helped the Broncos win a Super Bowl. And Kyle Shanahan believes that Trent Williams is on that kind of level that he can make that much of a difference for Joe Staley, who told the 49ers before the draft that he planned to retire.
And then how about the team that beat them in the Super Bowl? Kansas City get better?
This is a great story here, Greeny, because Andy Reid and the general manager, Brett Veach, reached out to Patrick Mahomes before the draft. They said, Patrick, we know you study this. Who's the one guy that you'd like to see us take? And he goes, Coach, the one guy that I think would be unbelievable on our offense is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And sure enough, later in the draft, that was exactly the player that Andy Reid and Brett Veach wanted to draft. Reid, Veach, and Mahomes all on the same page. They get a guy that Andy Reid believes might just be better than Brian Westbrook in the Chiefs offense.
That's a terrific story, and that's how successful organizations operate. Then we go back to the Patriots. Despite having just second-year pro Jarrett Stidham and veteran Brian Hoyer on their roster, they did not select any quarterbacks in the draft. And I was fascinated by Belichick's comment when he said it, quote, wasn't by design. The team has since added two undrafted free agent quarterbacks, and we'll bring Dan and Marcus back in. But Shefty, I would start with you. Does this mean Jarrett Stidham will be the Patriots starting quarterback this season?
Well, I think we felt all along that he was going to be the starting quarterback, at least the favorite to be the starting quarterback going into camp whenever training camp begins. And I think New England would have liked to have drafted a quarterback somewhere in the draft. It just didn't work out for them at that point in time. And they're not going to force a pick and bring in a guy that they don't believe can unseat Jarrett Stidham, who they do like, and Brian Hoyer, the cheap veteran backup. And so the draft fell the way it did. The board fell the way it did. The Patriots were more than content to pick the players they did and then go sign, as you mentioned, Greeny, two undrafted free agent quarterbacks after the draft.
Right, but not generally speaking, we would assume, not the kinds of players who were legitimately going to compete with Stidham for the starting job week one. So, Dan Orlovsky, as you assess their quarterback situation right now, how would you describe it?
Intriguing, unknown. You know, I think that the reality is this. Bill Belichick and his staff have a totally different vantage point and viewpoint of Jarrett Stidham than us. You know, we know Jarrett Stidham, okay, fourth round pick, and he ended up winning the backup job. But the reality is that Tom Brady practiced the least amount last year than he ever did in his career. And I promise you that Bill Belichick was putting Jarrett Stidham in unique spots of, I want to see how he handles practice today. He's our starter today, and he's the face of our franchise today. So let's how he handles practice, and how he handles throwing three interceptions, and how he handles ripping up our defense. And they got to see Jarrett Stidham different than we did. And my guess is that, not my guess, they put their actions into words, or their words into actions this past weekend, and didn't take anybody ahead of Stidham. So they believe that he's their future, at least up until this point now. And I don't see them wavering off that. He does so many things that are important to their offense, with pocket movement and attacking the middle of the field really well. I think Bill Belichick sees Jarrett Stidham as the future of the Patriots.
Marcus, and you know Stidham well, obviously, covering him as you do for the SEC Network, and he was all over. He obviously played his college football there, and so you saw him. So I would ask you right now, do you view the Patriots, with Jarrett Stidham as their quarterback, as the team to beat in the AFC East?
No, I don't view them as the team to beat, but I think they'll be better than what everybody is thinking. Gee, first of all, we got to get off this high horse. Tom Brady is gone. There will be a significant drop off in quarterback play. So let's give this kid a chance. The second thing is, in college, Jarrett Stidham was pretty good. He threw 48 touchdowns, 13 picks. And I don't know, I want to take people back to remember the year he beat Alabama and Georgia in back-to-back weeks when Auburn was trying to make a push to get in the playoff for the first time, a two-loss team. Eventually, they were beat by Georgia in the SEC championship. Jarrett Stidham is really good. And think about this. This year's draft, we had the conversation with Joe Burrow, Tua, and Justin Herbert. Jarrett Stidham would have been in that conversation, or right in the tier right after those guys, as somebody that could come in and successfully play or be a significant backup. He's had the opportunity to sit behind the best to ever do it. He's been with Josh McDaniels. We know Bill Belichick to be one of the better evaluators of football players, not quarterback per se, but football players. I believe in giving Jarrett Stidham a chance, and I'm giving him benefit of the doubt that he can do it.
Okay, yeah. He certainly was more highly touted coming out of college than Tom Brady was, and that one worked out well. Shefty, can I ask you about something else, though, because something I really wanted to get to here. Because the name Cam Newton now is still out there. Assuming Jameis Winston does wind up in New Orleans, as you tell us he's very close to doing, that really leaves one huge free agent quarterback out there. What is happening and going to happen now with Cam Newton?
Again, it's a problem of there being a physical. How is somebody going to put their hands on Cam Newton at this point in time? I think right now it would seem to be in a holding pattern. And you tell me, is there an obvious landing spot where Cam is going to get a starting job? There's not. Is there an obvious landing spot where he's going to make the money he wants? There's not. And so I think Jameis Winston had to modify his expectations and eventually came to the realization that New Orleans is a smart place for me to play. I don't know where Cam is at in his thinking right now. I don't know if he's modified his expectations. I don't know if he feels like he still must have a starting job, if he must have starting quarterback money. There's a lot of different questions here. I don't know where he's at in this process. But obviously, it's a difficult spot for him to be in right now, and I don't view it as there being an obvious landing spot for him right now.
Marcus, if Cam Newton were to call you up and say, how do you view this situation? What advice would you give him?
Hey, Cam, go check down there in Jacksonville, see if Doug Marrone wants you to come in. That's your best chance to start. And with some of these states lifting these quarantine issues, he may be able to get a physical somewhere eventually. He's working out, putting the videos up. But to me, look, Gardner Minshew obviously is the guy that they're hoping can continue to make Jacksonville a really good team. But if you look at landing spots, potentially for Cam Newton, Jacksonville is one of those spots. Played at the University of Florida, not too far from Jacksonville, and I think Cam could go into camp, obviously, with an opportunity to be the starter if he's fully healthy in Jacksonville.
Dan?
I don't see Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville has plans in the future. I would say the place that we often mentioned with Jameis Winston, go to Pittsburgh. You know, Big Ben has played all 16 games of a season four times in his career. So the likelihood of you getting on the field as the backup quarterback is pretty high. And so if you're Cam, go there. You got to lower your expectations. Give me the one-year deal. It's very similar. What's the right decision? Not the one you want, but what's the right decision? And if that's the best opportunity that you can go be a backup to Big Ben, get on the field, get yourself healthy. It's also really good for Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh should be a contending playoff team, and that's an upgrade at that position, obviously. So you got to find a place where you think it's likely you get on the field and then get the opportunity to play well and rebuild your career when you're healthy.
Go ahead, Chesty.
But Dan, you're throwing out Pittsburgh. Marcus is throwing out Jacksonville. We could probably throw out a half dozen other teams that make some sort of sense. The fact of the matter is there's not one team that just screams at you, go sign here. And so he's got to pick a spot that he believes is best for him. He's got to understand he's probably not going to be a starting quarterback going into camp. He's not going to make the money he'd like to. And if all those things then align, then we have a potential landing spot. But there are probably a half dozen places you could point out, but not one stands above the other.
So does it feel very, Chef, you have 15 seconds. Jackson. Might this be one that goes into training camp, like injury kind of thing?
Well, listen, he can choose to wait and see what jobs open, see if there's a quarterback that gets hurt. Possible, Greeny, would make some sense there.
All right, we'll have to wait and see. Guys, stay with me. We're busy all morning long as we continue talking football with you. And then tonight on ESPN, our look back at the greatest Monday night football games continues. Week 5 from 2007, the Cowboys' Monday night miracle in Orchard Park against the Bills. You can see it tonight, 8 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. We have a very, very busy second hour this morning. Coming up, we will dive into The Last Dance. Top of the hour, Jalen Rose and Stephen A. Smith share their memories of Bulls Pistons. Then Isaiah Thomas at 9:30 Eastern reacts directly to what Michael said about him. Don't miss it. Huge hour coming your way as we get up with you on ESPN.